If you think you're getting away, I will prove you wrong.
Can't, please don't sing that song.
Okay.
Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Adam Richmond. And joining me as ever is the old leaky bucket boy.
A very, very leaky indeed, well, this time of year.
You know, we're doing this episode because you have the leakiest of buckets.
I've leaked all over the place.
You know, you promised, you went on record and you promised our listenership a special Christmas Day episode.
And now I look around and all I can see is the wreckage of my leakage.
We, you know, I'm a busy man, I'm a family man, and I took a good, you know, a good 2 days.
A solid chunk
a day, let's say, full time.
More than a solid chunk, actually. I think we should up that to a sizable chunk.
The whole point of it was because, you know, you begged mm-hmm. me, and you wanted me to reassess the trilogy.
Yeah.
And I did.
Yes, you did.
I did reassess them.
Guess what? I got what I was after.
I gave them, you asked me to rank them before we recorded, and I said sort of, about 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
And after it, I said, 6.8 out of 10.
No, I think...
No,
listen, the recording's before, lost, so we can't, but, right, you know, it was up a smidgen,
This is what we'll get to. Your fingers slipped, and you didn't record your end.
Well, I did. I recorded it on my webcam.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't even know how you'd do that. And you were so ashamed, and I felt so bad for you. So it's just going to be one of those lost episodes.
Yeah.
And
it's kind of like I went all the way to Mount Doom and I, you know, threw the ring in, but actually it just sort of got stuck on a rock on the side or something, and there was sort of no way of getting down to it to kick it in, so just left.
I did enjoy the experience. I really didn't like Two Towers.
Sure.
I felt that was filler. Just, I'll do a little quick recap. I was massively dead wrong about, like, them having dated CGI and looks-wise. I thought they looked fantastic. CGI didn't really bother me. I'd made fun of Legolas sliding down an elephant's trunk.
An oliphant, yeah.
I think it's pronounced elephant.
Mm-hmm.
I made that joke twice, guys.
Yep,
I made that joke twice. Oh, and it got... It was funnier the second time. But I did... I didn't really enjoy it. I liked Return of the King. I thought, it's all coming together. I got a bit... I'd cut bits, man. Just cut it all down and wedge it together as two films. I don't want to go back to the Shire.
Sure.
Ever again.
Okay.
But thanks for having me.
Well, it was my pleasure. I loved it. I had a great time. I'm not even that sad that the episode was ultimately unlistenable, because I didn't care about that. I just wanted to watch Lord of the Rings with my friend.
Yeah, but I didn't want to do that. I only wanted to do it for content.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to the host, and Joe prefers to the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
You do owe, you know, you still owe me 8 films.
I know, we've agreed about that.
Listen, I think you already watched one that I claimed wasn't a recommendation, but you can take that. I think that was a month ago. What was that
true
film?
It was The Fighter.
It was The Killer.
The Killer, not The Fighter.
The Fighter was on the job stuff.
The Fighter, The Killer, they're all the same.
So, and you did rewatch Heat recently.
Yes. Wasn't really a direct recommendation, but you caused me to rethink my perspective on Heat, so I thought, I'll give that a watch.
That counts, man. You can cross... That's two, man. I'm so impressed that you returned to Heat, because I was
really upset by... I'm going to talk to you about Heat in today's episode.
Well, great. I'm just hot off watching Saltburn, having watched it with my wife. You've seen it.
Yeah, I watched it a few days ago.
Let's make this an episode that isn't just a 5-minute apology for you not being able to record your recording.
Sounds good, daddy-o.
I really enjoyed Saltburn.
Yeah, man, I liked it too.
It was loads of fun.
Yeah.
It's so well made. It's
fun, the operative, I would say.
It's fun. It's silly. It's really well shot.
Yeah.
I wanted to call it The Talented Mr. Dripley.
Yeah.
Which I think is fun.
That is really fun. That's very good, yeah.
I think the only thing that's wrong with it is the final 10 minutes, which are really stupid.
Deeply stupid.
But I don't care. It doesn't make me think worse of the film. I wouldn't say to someone, oh, don't watch it, because the last... I'd definitely recommend anyone watch it.
And in isolation, the Sophie Ellis-Bextor scene, which does happen at the end of the film, I really like that as a thing on its own. I like that song. I like what he does. And I would watch that.
He dances around with his willy and naked, with, as if like naked.
That's right.
You see his willy.
And I liked that.
It doesn't make a lick of sense.
Yeah. I mean, there's more. I'd probably extend that to probably the last sort of 15 mins. I didn't love the direction of the film, but watching Barry Keoghan dance around a big old house nude to the Sophie Ellis-Bextor song. Yeah, I'm very, very happy to watch that.
I mean, that's when it is just obviously just a bit of a music video, them having fun.
It's a coming of age story for the TikTok generation.
I wasn't going to watch it. I wasn't going to see this at all.
On what basis?
Well, the trailer, it's a fantastic trailer, but I thought, I know what this is. And then the reviews started coming out and they were fairly middling, and there were a couple of raves, but generally people were sort of saying it all goes very crazy for the second half of the film. It all goes off the rails. It's like people talking about it, about the stuff about class and how it kind of hates the working class or something. And I was like, oh, okay, I won't watch this. It's looked like it might be up its own arse.
Sure.
But it's just, it's very self-aware.
Yeah.
It's very entertaining. It's, mm-hmm. it's. I think it is, there's some gorgeous shots. There's some fantastic moments
yep.
in it. Really fantastic moments. Really funny, dark. Richard E. Grant is amazing.
Very good.
That's why I wasn't going to watch it. And then I'm waiting for the film to go off the rails. And it doesn't. It doesn't go off the rails. It's all just, it continues and kind of... In the vein that it's set out.
Sure.
And then it kind of seems like it hurries this, it wants this very hurried final 10 minute kind of full stop or exclamation mark.
Yeah.
And it's just like, well, okay, I would rather have, you know, she could have got away, Emerald Fennell, the right director, could have got away with a lot more ambiguity.
Yeah. It's funny that it's released now, and it's a fairly modern film in many ways, but then it chose to have such a rounded end. I mean, it really could have ended 20 minutes before that, and that would have been fine.
I would have given it 4 stars if it had ended more obliquely. As it is, it spells everything out.
Sure.
And that's fine.
He does that in a sort of weird... There's a weird moment... I'm aware that we are for the first time discussing a film which was released relatively recently, and I know many people who've been watching it in the last week or so. So we won't, as we haven't done so far, we won't give anything away.
No,
but there is a moment in this film where you know something's happened, and then there's a bit of a now look back and see that with a fresh perspective. And my wife and I turned to each other and we said, well, yeah, the film already told us that. You know?
Yeah, I don't need...
I don't understand what... Does it think I don't know? Or is it like... If it's just a... Hey, for anyone out there who's not been paying attention, just for extra clarity, this, what you already knew, it is that, yeah? I didn't need that. I was a bit confused at that point. And the film sort of goes downhill from there.
But only two of those moments are significant.
Sure.
Of like, this is what was going on. And as opposed to if it had left it all to the imagination, that's when people could have gone down to the pub afterwards and gone, oh, do you think, you know, had the conversation.
Yeah.
What was going on.
Agree.
And it says, it's kind of, well, again, I keep saying kind of.
It's gone, no, don't talk. No, 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 this is what happened.
But It's coming for some real stick, and I don't understand.
Is it?
Yeah,
where's the stick coming from?
I guess it's just one because it's got a very sexy guy in it called Jacob Elordi, who is in, I think he's in Euphoria.
Elordi, Jacob's so hot.
Yeah, he's very good in it.
They're all good in it, man.
They're all very good in it.
And what's her name? Rosamund Pike.
Rosamund Pike.
She's absolutely terrific. I love her in this film.
And I think they're all served by a really good script.
Yep.
I think this is just people want to have a conversation about something. And the thing is, this film doesn't warrant a conversation. It's just fun.
Yeah. That, so, doesn't need to be more than that.
No. I don't think any films warrant a conversation. I don't know why I'm doing a film podcast.
Here's what I think. And this is the main reason. I was also going to sort of give this one a, not a perm miss, but a temp miss until the kind of, you know, the hoo-ha had died down a little bit. But the more time I spent on TikTok as Christmas approached, the more TikTok videos I saw about Saltburn.
Mm.
And I could see it's clearly resonated extremely strongly with a young audience. And it became obvious to me before I watched it, oh, this is probably, I mean, it could just be a big spike, you know, a lovely moment in time, which doesn't last. We'll have to wait to discuss canon. But I think it has a very, very good potential to be a real memorable coming of age film, like cool film for young people who are interested in films. Not just that, but also sexual identity and stuff. There are a lot of people making TikToks around this where they're sort of going, oh, those things that happened in the film that some people found icky or disgusting, I like those things. And that's who I am as a person, you know. And I've come across a lot of people kind of using it to help build their identity. Great stuff, fine. You know, we all did that when we were 19 years old with films. I spent a bit of time trying to think about what mine was. I was going to ask you, is there a film that you really, really connected with, you know, 18, 19, that you watched and thought, nothing like this has ever been made before. This thing happening now is the first time it's ever happened, and it's actually great. And then 10 years later, you look back and go, no, that was just fun. I was just at an age where I hadn't seen anything like that before, but it had a big impact on me. Can you think of what that film might be for you?
Yeah, I thought you were going to ask me what it was source-wise, like what, you know, what had got
got your goat?
Yeah, like, but no,
it's a mixture of all, isn't it? Because it's a time of sexual blossoming for all people.
When I saw Fight Club, when I was at uni, it would have been 20, like 19,
yeah.
20.
And that's darkly sexy.
But yeah, I'd never seen anything like that. And I still don't think there's no film really like that. I know it's been co-opted somewhat but so much, you know, that's got nothing to do with the film, and it's got nothing to do with, even Fincher's a bit down on it. Yeah, but I mean, I guess it is also a bit silly. It's got a very, if you can kind of, it's quite easy to make fun of. Yeah, no, but so that's for me. What about you? What's the film? You can talk about Source if you want.
Yeah,
Source-wise. I know you don't like to talk about Source.
I don't love to talk about Source.
You tell me to cut it out of episodes. And I say, listen, can we keep the Source in? And you say...
You, me and the audience know that the most of our Source conversation relates to mayo anyway. But spill that. Anyway... I tried to think about this. I tried to think: is there a sexy Source film that really got me going? It's worth acknowledging that's only really a part of the equation here, because the other, and I think for me the bigger part of it is a film that you watch as someone of that age, you know, between let's say 16 to 20, right? You watch it and you think, despite having no evidence to back it up, and not really having seen that many films because you're only young, you watch it and you go, this is definitely new and amongst the best. Such is the engagement that it causes you to have with it and, you know, your connection to it and whatever. And that's what I see people doing with Saltburn anyway, which I think is great. And for me, probably one of those films, I would say Lost in Translation is one of those films, where my view of it is definitely biased by being impacted by it at that time, watching it and personally not having really seen a film like that before, where there was this great, I mean, I'd seen Bill Murray in a few things, but I'd never seen Bill Murray like that. I'd never seen this great, older, engaging, charming chap, lovely young Scarlett Johansson, a film where nothing really happens and it's slow, and it introduced me to all music that I hadn't heard before and like really struck a tone with me. I remember watching that for the first or second time and thinking, well, that's definitely one of the best films ever, and being convinced that that was the case. I can watch it now and reflectively and go, that's a good film. That's good fun. But I'm happy and proud for that to be a film that I bonded with at that age, which is the feeling I got when I watched Saltburn. Like my wife and I, we didn't engage with it in that way. We thought, oh, this is fun. And I like that. I like the music. And the one thing that was weird is I think it's set in around 2005, 2006, which is when I was, you know, that age.
Great score.
It's the first time I've seen a film which is clearly set in a period of time in the past. And it's even, you know, the aspect ratio, I think, is 4:3. So that made me feel quite old.
I don't think the aspect ratio has got anything to do with it being 2006. Like, she's obviously picked that aspect ratio, so it's slightly boxy. I don't think it's quite 4:3. Can we find out?
It's definitely not Instagram square box like A Ghost Story.
No.
It's definitely a little wider than it is tall.
It is.
It may well not be 4:3. It looked 4:3 to me.
But that's not 2006. That's not that aspect ratio doesn't speak to that, I don't think.
The film is shown in a 1.33:1 aspect ratio.
Yeah.
With Fennell saying it gives the impression of peeping in.
Right. But yeah, I thought that really, I barely noticed it, and I thought it worked wonderfully.
I mean, 1.33:1 is basically, it is 4:3. That's just what they call it in cinema, right? If you just do the maths, that's 4:3.
Is it?
Well, yeah, because if it's 1.33 against 1, how many 3-3s are there in 1? There's 3. If you add another one, that's 4. It is 4:3.
No, you're absolutely right. I'm bang wrong.
Well, it gave the impact of peeping in. It also, I really
don't think it did.
That's what she said.
Let's not give her too much credit.
You don't want to let that one just go by without a challenge, though.
No.
I felt like I was peeping in. I didn't want to see some of the things I peeped in on.
I don't know, really. I'm a natural glutton for lots of things. A glutton for punishment, I suppose, being one of them. It's amazing to me that I've been doing this job for over 20 years now.
I hate film. Again, I've said this before. I just don't like film criticism. And I don't know why they would even bother in unpicking this film. And I don't even think it's for old people. I don't want to get generational about it. I'm old.
No, it's not.
But I don't. There's nothing for
them. There's nothing to unpick.
And there's nothing for them to get. Like, it is. It's for. It's not specifically for young people, but like, I think you're right in when you say it could be a formative film.
I think it is. I feel like just this moment is big enough that I think it will last and carry for a significant enough number of people that it will be there lost in translation.
And my Fight Club.
And like, your
no
Fight
one
Club.
Can say anything to me about Fight Club.
Sure.
Because it was my formative film.
What was the first... What do you remember the first film that you saw that you watched alone, you weren't with your parents, it was yours? It was like a bit like music. People have that with music, right? Where they have their family music that they grew up listening to. Mine was sort of 90s, 90s rock and pop and old Irish folk music. So the Pogues and Mercury Rev, they're not really mine. But then I had my own music, which was... awful, you know, new metal, emo stuff.
I don't say it's awful. It's good.
Not
man.
Awful. You know what I'm saying?
It's great.
No, I was thinking of specifically awful stuff. Not stuff that, like, you and I like together.
Don't shit on the genre, right?
Nothing that... No, I'm talking about, like, Stained, you know? Remember Stained?
I was going to say, with arms wide open, but that's Creed.
That's Creed, yeah. My point was more, do you remember the first film that you watched that it was your film, that it wasn't something that you would have watched with your family, that it was something that like connected with you, that felt a little different, that made you feel different to society? Because that's what Saltburn is to these kids. These kids are saying, hey, everyone else thinks it's weird and creepy, the stuff in Saltburn. I like it. That's what they're saying. Like, it's a for me. I'm unusual. That's what they want to share.
Well, what you see, me and my brother and sister, we'd managed to get access to stuff like The Terminator, right, and RoboCop, and that is so violent, so
that
gory.
Is very violent.
And we're talking, yeah, like, yeah, 7 or 8. Amazing. So that and The Terminator.
I feel though that those are mainstream films that any young person would like. What's the first film you saw that, no, not at 8 for sure, but what's the first film you saw that you felt could help define you in, you know, opposition to the rest of society? A film that was yours, that wasn't like
Fight
one
Club.
That, if any other.
We're just going over. It's
Fight
this.
Club.
It's
was Fight Club not like. Didn't everyone like Fight Club?
No, absolutely not. It was a bomb.
Is that the case?
It was not a success at all.
Oh, this is the context I was missing, Adam.
It was genuinely, at the time, and it's a massively overused word, it was a cult film.
Right.
And it stayed, man. It stayed. It was it is and was canon because it was so good and it was discovered by people. You know, that was, it was seeing that. It was more like I read, what did I read? It was more the books I read at 15. Reading American Psycho, that was the first thing I read that I thought, oh, fucking hell, this is, it's really funny and it's, the violence in it is beyond the pale.
Sure.
And I didn't think anything like that was allowed.
Right.
So I think that was an eye opener.
But that's what Saltburn is to some of these kiddos, you know. And that's my point, right? Like, I watched that and I thought, sure.
Looks such a granddad.
to these young whippersnappers, these kiddos, I think I was delighted to be in a place where I was able to enjoy the film that was gripping a generation that wasn't mine. Do you know what I mean? And there were parts of me that felt, I had that instinct where I was like, you know, watching these TikToks and the kids were saying, this is, you know, this is new. And I was thinking, it's not new. But I said the same thing. And that was the beginning of my, you know, journey into the lovely world of cinema and films. So I'm just delighted for them, basically. And then I've spent all week singing that Sophie Ellis-Bextor song and thinking, yeah, great, well done. Well done, everyone involved.
Why don't you... You said you wanted to play the box office game for Saltburn.
Well, the problem with playing the box office game, though, for Saltburn is we can only really do takings because the production cost, the budget, hasn't been released yet and it is only assumed to be somewhere between 10 and...
20.
And no, 10 and 35 million. They've no clue.
Well, they haven't released the figures. Sometimes they keep these budgets under lock and key for quite some time.
Well, on that basis then, though, do you want to try to guess the opening weekend US and Canada? Because we have that.
I think it would have done okay.
November 19th.
It would have picked up some critical heat. It's got a sexy... a sexy guy. It's going to connect with young people. There's a scene, there's a bathroom scene that everyone's talking about. So it's got some provocative stuff in. Is it going to make $400,000?
Oh, $322,000.
Oh,
that's delightful.
Yeah.
That's very good.
That's
what,
nice,
man, on the fucking money. You have sucked that number right out of the plug hole. Well done. Okay. Moving on to gross worldwide now.
When I went to see Wonka, I did spy on the listings in the picture house that Saltburn was still, you could still see it in the cinema. And that's quite a long, if a film's still knocking around, it means it's making money.
One would assume.
Well, you don't have to assume. That's a fact. It's not an assumption. You know, you don't keep it for films not making money. You know.
You're in a tricky situation, aren't you, really? Because what you've done is, with opening weekend, you've knocked the ball out of the park.
Yeah.
And everyone in the audience has stood up and they've looked over to the bit of the stadium that the ball has gone over and they can't fucking believe it. They think it's the best thing that's ever happened.
Yeah.
That's quite difficult, isn't it?
If it's if it costs between 10 and 35, I want it to have made money. I feel like it has, but it can't have made that much money. It hasn't made that much of a splash. Let's say 15 million.
Not far off. 19 million.
Oh, man, I had 20, man. 20 million. The 20 million bell was ringing in my head, and right. I thought, oh, maybe not quite. Okay. Fennel will get another bite of the cherry, and she deserves one.
Buongiorno. Nice sweater.
I tried to watch Maestro today.
The Mulligan connection.
Yeah, I want to Mulligan over to Maestro. And here's what I wrote about it. This is going to be very rude. And
you're
not,
just going to shit on it.
It's not valuable. Let's get that out there ahead of time, yeah? No value in this.
Do you want to be this guy?
No.
This is what I do.
Okay. Can you read it for me?
Yeah. This is what I think of Maestro. Yeah, a film I haven't even seen.
Thank you.
Made it 24 minutes in. Fuck's sake. Let's pretend time. Everyone making the movie forgets that nobody else gives a fuck about these old entertainment types. Self-indulgence. Fuck off, Bradders.
That sounds like a really good opinion.
I'm sad to hear that. There's nothing that was compelling me to see that. It's getting big time love.
Well, that's why I watched it. And let me caveat your views, if I can, by saying you only made it 24 minutes in. You did think, in order to be fair about this, you would need to give it another solid 30 minutes. But you also sort of tossed it up and down and thought, you know, do I really want to do that? You answered no. And then you stopped. And you probably drew too many correlations with other films that, you know, are sort of made about old American entertainers or Hollywood or, you know, I don't know.
What other films do you mean?
You know.
I bet you can't name one of them.
Yes, I can.
Yeah, go on then.
That one that was made by the guy who made... I forget everyone's name. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yeah?
That's...
I actually like that film.
You would liken that to... You'd put that in the same wheelhouse as Maestro?
Not at all. Not at all. I wouldn't do that at all. That's very, very stupid of me. My point is more that I have seen other films where young now actors play old entertainers from old Hollywood or America, and where...
I just don't think you've seen that film. I think in your head you think you have.
Well, you know, what about Mank?
Stop watching that.
Yeah. What about
boring?
You know, La Dolce Vita.
You're so pathetic. I know when you've Googled, and I'd love to know what you Googled. Films about filmmaking.
Films about old Hollywood.
Fucking hell.
That's what I Googled. Giving me any. Hail Caesar, I had thought of in my head, but I also the issue is the two films I could think of were films I liked. But anyway, my point is that your opinion about the film Maestro, it wasn't reasonable. That's what I'm saying anyway.
No, it is reasonable. Did you not, because it's 24 minutes in, you know exactly, the film has told you what it's going
to
be.
You were speaking to me, listen, you could watch another 30 minutes, it might get better. If it got better and you got into it, then what the fuck were they doing in the first 24 minutes? What the fuck were they doing? How is it acceptable? If this turned into a great film, this is still a bad film. Because at 24 minutes, I wanted to turn it off. And yeah, fine. 15 minutes, that's on you, me. 10 minutes, that's on you, me. 25 minutes in, that's on the film.
Maestro, mate. Fucking Schmaestro, more like.
And then to top it off... Cream on top of the pudding, big old fat cherry on there as well. When I turned it off, I spent 15 minutes looking for another film because I thought I'm not going to abandon my hope. So I watched Passages.
Right, everyone's banging on about that.
Have you seen Passages?
I don't. It just looks like art house wank.
Yep, for sure, for sure.
And I I'm not interested in like the like a threesome and like love, the travails of like love and like, oh, do I love you? Do I love you? Or like, I'm just, because I've decided, I know what I know what love is, right?
Sure.
I don't want to see someone else figuring out what love is. I've already figured it out. So unless it's this, what I've already figured out, and I don't think this film explores that. It might do. I doubt it. Before sunset, before sunrise, before sunset, and before midnight. And before midnight.
Before midnight.
Before midnight. Those are the films. Those films. That's they've already done it. I don't need to see anything
else.
Yeah,
they've done it. Yeah.
So I don't need to see. Incidentally, I rewatched sunrise and sunset, and we've got midnight lined up.
Oh God. Are you going to watch it with your wife?
We watched sunrise and sunset with the wife.
Sunrise and sunset with the wife. Lovely romantic experience. Midnight with the wife. An argument is brewing.
I can't wait. We've put it off for that very reason, maybe. And then we'll follow it up with Marriage Story.
Yeah.
And anyway, off topic. I got you off topic there.
No, that's fine. I think the thing is, Passages is basically everything you've said, but also really, really good. And I would never encourage you to watch it because it's exactly the kind of film...
Because
it's exactly the kind of film you would say what you just said about. If I went to see this in the cinema, I would have texted you and I would have said, oh, I just saw Passages. It's really good. Are you going to go and see it? And you would have sent me a WhatsApp voice note back going, no, everyone's talking about it. I have seen it 10 times before. I'm 100 years old. I know exactly everything that's in it. I don't care.
But why don't you like those voice notes?
I do. I love them. So that's why I'm telling you about it now.
You've got to recommend it to me, then.
Well, no, but I just did. You should watch it.
Is it sexy?
You actually should watch it because it's very sexy.
Right.
It's a lot. It's a, like, it goes straight up into that the top tier grouping, which I would include those Richard Linklater films in that. Those films that are about love and relationships.
Okay.
And, sort of transcend the normal boring bullshit. It's in that group, man.
Did you finish it?
I did finish it. It's terrific. I've really liked it. It's very intimate. It's very sexy. It plays with tone brilliantly. There is some very interesting cinematography in it. Personal close-up stuff, but also interesting choices about where the camera is in relation to people's faces. Like, stuff that's not too pretentious actually has a meaning, actually makes a difference, is something you can think about. I think you'd like that. Ben Whishaw is fucking amazing in this film. I've never seen him in anything that I thought, hey, that guy's an actor. I just thought, hey, he's good. He is a good face for the television. He's exceptional in this film.
It's in a lot of people's films of the year. Well, see, you've convinced me now. You put some effort in.
Look at that.
Was it up your alley source-wise?
Yes, yes. There are source moments in this film. I suppose for anyone who hasn't seen the trailer, doesn't know what the film is about, the film centres around this man who is he's a German, but he lives in Paris. He's a film director, famous film director, kind of arty guy. And he's married to a man, but he has an affair with a woman. And that's sort of, you know, the first kind of act of the film deals with this notion. And he is a very... a very engaging, captivating character. You can see everyone wants to be around him. He's this, you know, he's kind of larger than life in some ways. And he's the kind of guy who, because of how he is, how he talks, how he looks at life, he sort of gets away with things that normal people don't get away with because he's an artist, you know. He does, and the actor, whose name I wrote down because I'd never seen him in anything before, his name is Franz Rogowski. It's one of those performances where, you know, you've never seen an actor before. You watch him in a film and you go, I cannot fucking imagine how that guy is ever going to be able to do any other character. He just belongs in this man. He's so good in it. And as a film, it's just a great, solid 8 out of 10 film. But there's so many special things about it that I want to give it more.
Well, maybe you'll come back to it, and it'll stay with you, and it'll creep up. Okay, you know, and also it looks like a good little flick.
Anyway, you should watch the film. It's very good.
Yeah, I'm gonna watch it.
Recommend.
I'll watch that Eight Mountains as well. Probably.
Did you?
No, I will.
Oh.
because they're going to see it popping up on people's lists.
It's popping up.
People have to share their lists of the year. Oh, these are my favourite films of the year. No, in fact, they don't even say that. They say these are the best films of the year.
They do say that, yeah.
And you say,
what were your top three best films of the year?
There are no best. I haven't seen enough films.
Just yours. That's why I said yours.
So my favourite films of the year,
yeah,
that I saw in the cinema.
Your best movies, yeah.
I think the best film I saw all year at the cinema was Anatomy of a Fall.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I very recently saw, Godzilla Minus One was, for the ending and the experience, like, pretty special.
Mm-hmm.
And if I managed to see The Boy and the Heron before the year's out, oh. I imagine that would get the third spot.
We should watch that together.
No. I'm going. That's just for me, all by myself.
Okay.
I don't think this film has been particularly this. I don't think this year's been particularly strong or noteworthy.
Right. Yeah.
Do you think?
I've no idea what came out. I can't remember anything. But I did watch Roman Holiday yesterday.
Why?
I don't know. I just wanted to watch an old movie. Hadn't seen it before. Popped up on one of those kind of lists. One of the Before You Die lists or whatever. Sounded fine. Stuck it on. And I thought it was good. Enjoyed it. But then got confused. And I thought, have you seen this film, Roman Holiday?
I've not, no.
Basically, here it is. I'll describe the film to you, the plot of the film, and you tell me which much more modern film, albeit not now modern, I immediately assumed was just this film under a different name, yeah? There's a princess, very famous princess, who's from a foreign land, who comes to Rome. And there, she's young and she's full of angst and she runs away for a day and she ends up sort of spending it with this American man who's in Rome writing for an American newspaper. And he doesn't initially know who she is, but then he realizes it. And then they have this kind of pretend thing where they spend this secret time together when the whole of Rome is searching for her. And he's trying to get an interview and... you know, she's just trying to have a good time. So he shows her a good time, like how normal people have a good time. And she likes it because she's come down to earth for this good time. And then it ends, the film ends with him deciding not to publish this story that he'd written about her or all the photographs that he got of her doing things that she would have got in trouble for because he actually loves her. And at the end of the film, the last scene is he goes to a press conference to sort of express that through secrets and, you know, vaguely not really masked at all language, and she really likes that he expresses that.
It's Notting Hill, isn't it?
It's Notting Hill, yeah. I mean, it's literally Notting Hill. And I instantly looked it up because I said, hang on, this is Notting Hill. I didn't know Notting Hill was based on another film. And Richard Curtis says it's not, and he'd never seen it.
Do you believe Richard Curtis?
I mean, I have to take Richard Curtis at his word, but also... It literally is Notting Hill. I cannot understand how two coincidences could occur like that. I mean, if it wasn't for the press conference bit at the end, I'd think, fine, fair enough. You know, that's a fish out of water story. And lots of novels are written in this way, and it's a great way of getting to learn about a new world, having someone that's not from there, and putting two characters that would never meet together. I get all of that. But just when you add all of that together with this press conference scene at the end, which I think in 1953 would have been cool as fuck, man. Also, they don't get together. It's a sad ending, but a kind of sad, happy ending. It felt very postmodern in that way. I believe him when he says he hasn't seen it, but I mean, it's Notting Hill. It literally, you know.
I was having a quick look at what else I've seen this year. I quite liked the Korean film Past Lives, but...
Oh, that was good.
It was good. It was fine. But yeah, nothing on the Before Sunset. Gave me Before Sunset vibes, but not as good. And the new Mission Impossible. Obviously, that's... Because I thought that was... It was fine pootling along. And I get the finale was, you know... Goosebump territory for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, haven't seen enough films and wouldn't dare to tell anyone. You know, mind your own business.
Well, a couple from me. loved Oppenheimer. Really enjoyed Killers of the Flower Moon. Two very forgettable films I saw in the cinema that I'm only remembering now as I sift through a list. Scrapper, weird English indie art house film, and Paris Memories. Do you remember that one?
Well, that's a rather flat ending to 2023, but you know what? It's nothing that this shit year doesn't deserve. Absolute fucking stinker in every single respect. And it's only going to get worse. So join us for 2024. And, well, we've got lots of great films coming up. And once again, on behalf of Joe, he's really, really sorry he fucked up Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
It was a doozy.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe this will make up for it.
Probably not, but like, you know, it goes some way towards that.
Email us at moviesyouforgot@gmail.com with your thoughts, directors as cheeses, what else? Films you think we should do. There have been some great suggestions. I forget what some of our other games have been.
I'd love to hear people's most forgettable films of 2023 as well. I think that's nice.
Yeah, films that you think would be, yeah, our future episodes. That's a nice idea. And you can follow me on Letterboxd at Error of Ways. I love getting new followers.
You always follow back as well, don't you?
I always follow back.
That's the main thing I know about
Someone left me a comment. It's quite rare for people to leave comments.
Really?
I think generally it's not kind of a commenty type place. But I'd written a review of it was a hilarious review of Another Round. Do you want to hear my review of Another Round?
I haven't seen.
Have you seen
film?
Another Round?
No, it's been on my list for a while because it looks good.
I watched it in 2022, and I said, "Can't believe they made a film based on a Mitchell & Webb sketch. Can't believe it works." It's got two likes, and a guy called Lewis recently commented 5 days ago, "Can't believe we did the same review a week apart."
Oh.
So I like that.
Film friends, that's nice.
Film friends, but my review doesn't really do justice to it. It's a fantastic film. It's a great look at male friendship and the kind of tricky relationship. It's the best film about booze I've seen, and there aren't loads, but it's not this dreary film about alcoholism. It's got all the facets of the place alcohol has in people's lives.
Oh.
And Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah.
Mads Mikkelsen.
A hero of our time.
I prefer it when he's not in Danish films.
Right.
Like that and The Hunt. Have you seen The Hunt?
No, I know. I've been meaning to, but
I tell you what.
It just never seems like the right day to watch The Hunt.
It's always the right day.
Okay.
You watch The Hunt and Another Round and you can cross two more films off your homework.
Okay, I will watch them. I will.
Do them back to back, you could have a Mads double bill.
I might not back to back them, but I will watch both of them. A quick thanks also to Matthew Court and Aris Martz, amongst a few others who have more complicated usernames, who tweeted their disappointment that we hadn't released the Lord of the Rings episode. Without your intervention, we probably wouldn't have recorded this. And I've had a fun time. So thanks, gang.
Yeah, hopefully it cuts up nice. See you, everyone. Say bye, Joe.
Bye, Joe.